And welcome to The Two Dyspraxics. I'm Barbara Neal.
And I'm Matthew Munson.
So today, this is part two of our best moments, because we have so many best moments between us, Matthew and me. We can't squeeze them all into half an hour, and I suspect we'll be hard pushed to squeeze them all into 2 half-hour sessions. But anyway, so this is part two. So Matthew, it was your turn last time. So do you want to kick off?
Oh, go on then. Okay, thank you. put me on the spot. No, it's fine. Okay, so one for me is, and hopefully this might resonate with people, it's about education. And when I remember, so this was about, 20 years ago-ish, 22 years ago, I had done my A-levels. I stayed on at school until I was 18, done my A-levels, and had an eye on university. Because I thought that's what something I wanted to do. I think there was a little bit of me that, I don't think I know actually, there was a little part of me that wanted to be the first one in the family to go to university. A course particularly interested me. And so I did it. So I went to university. I lasted 3 days at university. This is in Kent, University of Kent, Canterbury. And I can remember sitting in this lecture theatre thinking, I've made a terrible mistake. I don't want to be here. And I waited till the end of the lecture. I got up and I was meant to go to 2 more lectures after that. And I just walked off the campus. I thought, what the hell am I doing? I'm doing something here that I don't find interesting. I shouldn't have come to university. I want to go out and work. And I can remember, I lived at home with my parents at the time. And I remember going home to tell my mum. And my mum just went, yeah, I knew that. I don't know why you did it, but okay. And that was it. And then 2 years later, so I was 20, so this was literally 20 years ago, I decided that I was in a different place mentally and that I'd go back to university. Oh. I don't know. I was a stupid 20-year-old idiot, I think. So I went back. So I reduced my hours at the job I was doing, and I went back. So I worked part-time, and I went back to university, and I did 6 weeks. And it was a different course, and after 6 weeks, I found myself sitting there going, yep, I've made a mistake again. I can remember my dad, this was in Canterbury again, a different university in Canterbury, and I remember my dad used to work in Canterbury, so I'll come pick you up. So I got in the car, started going home, and I went, Dad, and he went, yeah, all right, all quit tomorrow. I didn't know what I was about to say. So that might not sound like a high spot. But what I got out of that was that I learnt that there are other ways of getting a good education than forcing myself to be a square peg in a square hole.
Yeah,
because I had it in my head that to get any kind of decent education post 18, you had to go to university. So I was monofocused. I admit it. I didn't look at any other options. I was just focused on that. And it taught me a very, very hard lesson in life, but a worthy one, that actually I didn't need to get letters after my name in order to be educated and taught in the subjects I'm interested in. And because of that, that inspired me to go to evening classes for adult education. I actually ended up doing a year's course at university, sponsored by work later on, but it was in a niche subject that I actually cared about. As it turned out, it wasn't that niche. It was a certificate in public health. These days, that's kind of useful. So it taught me a hard but effective lesson that I've carried with me for the last 20 years, in that education takes many forms, and that you don't need to sit at a desk in a room full of 60, 70, 80 students in a lecture theatre to get a good education. You learn at work, you learn on the job, you learn in smaller classrooms at your local adult centre on a Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, you learn just by talking to people and doing a job and just volunteering for things. And I've learned more in this last 20 years because I've had that mindset. So for me, that attempt at university when I was younger changed my thinking to I feel a far more healthier one, and opened my mind to new opportunities. You know, people often say, oh, I had my mind open to me because I went to university. I had my mind open because I quit university.
Right.
And that's genuinely how I feel about it. You know, I know it sounds bizarre, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I had to learn the lesson somehow. And because I can be fairly monofocused, that was the only way I was going to learn the lesson. The only way I was going to do it. And it taught me a hard lesson in life.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think also, you know, certainly from my point of view, I was expected to go to university from the school I went to. And being dyspraxic and not knowing I was dyspraxic, and I don't think anyone had heard about it in those days. So it just didn't happen. So I left school at the earliest available opportunity, and I did start an Open University course, and I've literally got half a degree now in psychology, various aspects of psychology. But the same thing, I mean, I was in circumstances where I just couldn't complete it because my living circumstances changed, and, you know, various things happened in my life. And but I think very often people go to university without an end in sight. You know, they don't know quite what's going to happen after that. So it's just university for the sake of university. And as you say, there are so many ways of learning the things that you want to learn. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
not the be-all and end-all.
Agreed.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
So
what's yours?
Well, one of the most memorable days I've ever had, actually, was in France when there's a friend of mine who lived on a barge and also had a small cabin cruiser. It was a four-berth cabin cruiser. Mm. And I was staying over there for a while, and he wanted to move from one place to another, which was about a 45-minute drive, but a whole day on a boat. And he said, he said, well, we need to move both boats. Have you ever driven a boat before? I said, no. And I was just hoping beyond hope that he didn't mean for me to drive the barge. It was a massive, great Dutch barge, but he didn't know. But obviously he wanted me to drive the cabin cruiser. So he said, okay, we'll go out for a little lesson, you know, on how to drive the boats. So, flipping heck, you know, and then tomorrow we'll move the boats. So I was, again, way out of the comfort zone. And to cut that long story fairly short, I spent the whole day driving this boat through the locks and everything in a canal, through the canal in France. It was the Canal du Midi, so it was down sort of southwest of France. And I spent the whole day, it was a beautiful summer's day, so the sun was shining, the birds were singing. That was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in my life. Just me and the boat. Brilliant. I did have the security of my friend and the barge in front, you know, and other people working the locks and stuff, so that was okay. But that was just the most incredible experience. I will never ever forget it. It was just fabulous. So that was a best moment for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, obviously it was kind of like right place, right time, right everything, wasn't it? Right ability to kind of process what was going on in terms of learning what you needed to learn.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
Opportunity, again, you know, when opportunities like that come up. I mean, it's not the kind of thing I would have elected to do, to be honest. Mm. So, again, it's out of the comfort zone and doing it anyway, because I didn't really have a great deal of choice, you know. I mean, it would have been very complicated to just take one boat at a time. But yeah, I thought, oh, sod it. Why not? If you'll pardon my vernacular. And it was incredible. Yeah. Just loved it.
Oh, that sounds and something like that, because it's something you wouldn't necessarily go to yourself, oh yeah, well, I'll do that, but because you were put in a situation where you thought I can do it, suddenly you thought I'm capable of more than I realised.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's phenomenal.
What's your next one then, Matthew?
Well, funnily enough, you saying that has prompted a memory in my mind that I've written a couple down, but I actually want to swap one of mine because you've prompted a kind of a semi unattached memory, but it, well, no, it doesn't link it at all, but for some reason you've inspired me to think of this. during lockdown, the whole lockdown things that are still going on and have been for ages. During the first lockdown, I was home educating my son, Brian, who was 9 years old at the time. And I started off when we first did it, you know, okay, 9 till 3, 9 till 10 is going to be English, 10 to 11 is going to be this, et cetera, et cetera. And I think within about 2 days, I realized that wasn't going to work for either of us. You know, I needed to be a lot more flexible. You know, I'm speaking to somebody here who has home educated her sons in a very holistic way. And I thought, I don't need to replicate the classroom at home. I think it took me a couple of days to realize, to see the impact that was having on Brian. Because Brian needed home to be home and school to be school. And that's what I needed as well. And so I thought, no, I'm not going to do it like this because Brian doesn't need it. And it's bad for his mental health. He needs to learn, but he needs to learn in a way that's right for him. So we did topics. It meant quite a bit of work for me, especially on like Sunday night. So I'd stay up till God's sake times coming up with these concepts. But we'd do a couple of weeks on, I don't know, the Tudors or part of history or this, that, and the other, the things that I kind of knew enough about to be able to come up with something. And so we'd do some writing within that. I'd come up with some math stuff I got help on the math stuff because I'm not very good at math. And one particular day, it was a really hot day in the middle of summer. It was, I don't know, May time. And I wasn't working that day, so I was focused with Brian on his learning. And it was baking hot outside, and we were both struggling. Both of us a bit irritable. And I went, stop. I said, what the hell are we doing? I said, come on, we're going out. And Brian sort of looked at me and sort of surprised. I went, no, this is silly, Brian. We're flogging a dead horse. So we got our shoes on. There's a park, literally a 5-minute walk down the corner from where we live. And we got there about 11 o'clock in the morning. I'd packed a lunch and we stayed there till about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And we weren't just lying in the sun sunbathing. We were going through the trees and we were having a woodland walk. And we had a bit of a play and, you know, just being a bit daft. But we were doing nature. We were looking at the butterflies and we were following a bee going all around collecting the pollen. We were listening out for a woodpecker and we were chasing a woodpecker's sounds to the trees to find out which tree it was. And we were looking at the grass and how in the woodland area, how it all fell on the ground. And do you know what that was? Well, over a year ago, and both of us still remember it even now, because it felt like the perfect day.
It's more meaningful, isn't it?
It is. We connected. I didn't spend any money. I made up a lunch at home and we just put our backpack on and we went to the park. You know, we kept safe. We kept our distance from people as we had to because of what the COVID rules were. And we saw some dogs and we played with some dogs that people were out walking. And it was a meaningful connection. And it was just powerful. And I think as soon as both of us surrendered to that and just went, this is what we need to do today, it worked.
Yeah.
You know, and
than prescripted learning, you know, yes. is people don't really learn best that way, I don't believe.
No. I think I took Brian's tablet with us, which has got an inbuilt internet thing connection. And if we didn't know something about what's that butterfly or why is that bee bigger than that bee, is there a reason for it or whatever, we'd Google it, you know, and we'd find out the answer. And some of the lessons that we learned that day were still like, oh, look, there's that butterfly. Do you remember that butterfly? It's called a whatever. And we can remember it from that one single day.
Fantastic. Do you know, something you said there about you wanted home to be home and school to be school, that brought up a memory for me. It was when one of my sons, I won't say which one, but probably not the one you think it might be.
Oh, interesting.
But I had a phone call from one of their teachers, and she said, could you ask, name of son, I don't want to embarrass him, to behave himself when he's in class? So I said, yes, of course. Could you ask him to tidy his bedroom?
Barbara, well done.
I think she thought I was being sarcastic. I don't know why.
That's not... Yeah, again, how does she think... Short of you going into the classroom, sat with him and...
Yeah.
Well, then you couldn't do it.
Well, it's very much you school, me home.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating bad behaviour in the classroom, incidentally, but that was very much her domain rather than mine, I thought. But
well, absolutely. And that's what I always say to mine. On the rare occasions, doesn't happen often, on the rare occasions, if one ever comes out and says, oh, this happened or that happened, or you know, but I say, okay, did you tell the teacher that? Did you discuss it with the teacher? Well, no, I've told you. Okay, discuss it with the teacher. Come out and tell me what's the outcome, and then you and I together as a team will decide what response is needed, if any. Because at the end of the day, I'm not in charge of that classroom. I'm in charge of keeping Brian safe and happy and healthy and well and etc. Because I'm dad.
Yeah.
But in the classroom, I can't be there to police every single second. And what I've noticed is Brian does stand up for himself a bit more now. Not stand up for himself. He doesn't need to stand up for himself because he's got a good class. And a good teachers, but he will ask them first a question before going, oh, this happened today and I wasn't sure what to do. Okay, what can we do about that? So I take your point. You teacher, make that child make their bed at home, and you'll make him work. I mean, what a silly thing to say. Sorry, but it
is. That reminds me of my next best moment. And there was more than one of them, actually.
Ah.
When I was at infant school, so we're still on an education theme, but when I was at infant school, if it was someone's birthday, we used to be invited up to the front of the school. Excuse me. Better. We were invited up to the front of the school during assembly to show our birthday cards and presents to the whole school, really proudly. You know, it's my birthday today, so therefore I'm very special. That kind of thing. And the headmistress, as she was then, she wasn't a head teacher because this is way back in the early 60s, and she had a musical box. She used to open the musical box. It played Happy Birthday, and it had sweets in it. And then whoever's birthday it was could have a sweet from the musical box. Which,
oh, wow.
That would be massively frowned upon now for all sorts of reasons, I'm sure. But it was so good. And we were made to feel like heroes because it was our birthday. You know, bearing in mind that we were 5 and 6 and 7 years old.
Yeah,
that was just amazing. So they were best moments, and it felt really good. And then many, many years later, when I had at least two of my sons, possibly three of them, I can't remember, but many years after that, I was in the area, and I decided to just drop in on the off chance to the school. And so I was chatting, and I said, look, you know, I hope you don't mind me just dropping in. But I used to go to this school in 1960. I started there. So the secretary said, oh, that's really interesting. Hold on a second. I'll just go and get the head teacher. So the head teacher came out, and I said, one of my strongest memories from this school, one of my fondest memories, is about the musical box playing Happy Birthday and so on. So the head teacher said, oh, excuse me just a moment. She went back into her office and she came out. She had the musical box in her hand, the very same one. And she opened it and she said, have a sweet. So I thought, oh, thank you. And I kind of turned away because it was so overwhelming.
Wow.
I had a sweet from that musical box when I was well into adulthood. So that was just amazing. That was a moment.
But isn't that powerful that after all that time, you remembered it? They recognised it was important enough for you to want to go back in, so they respected that memory that you'd had.
I've got goosebumps now just talking about
that. I have a bit, just thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how schools do fit into the community, because good schools do recognise that to a lot of people, it it stays with them, stays with us for the rest of our life.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we remember the good teachers, we remember the bad teachers.
Well, one of the boys actually at school, when it was his birthday, he took his birthday cards in to show the class, and his teacher said, not now, we haven't got time. And that was it, and I thought, what a contrast, to how it was done as long ago as early 60s. So there you go.
And that is bad.
Yeah, but it is really important for children to feel valued. And that's how we felt valued at least one day a year, unless your birthday falls during school holidays, which would be unfortunate because I can't remember what happened then. It was a long time ago, but I suspect they probably honoured the birthdays of people who had had birthdays during the holidays. I'd be surprised if they didn't, frankly.
I was going to say that would seem slightly cruel in a way, wouldn't it, if they didn't kind of acknowledge those kids as well.
I'm pretty sure they would have done, but I honestly can't remember. It was such a long time ago. I've got just selective memory about those days now.
Well, yeah, I think most people do, don't they? That's
well, we're talking about 60 years ago. Yeah, that's a long time. So, what's your next moment?
Yeah, my mum was walking out of a job.
It's very similar to walking out of uni, actually.
Yeah. I think because the reason I say that one is I fully admit part of my personality is I'm a people pleaser. I like people to feel comfortable and content. I like people to like me. That's just part of my personality. And I can't remember why I'd taken this particular job, but I started working as a buyer, in charge of the purchasing of equipment and stuff. But I'd gone to work for a construction firm. Buyer for a construction firm. Why the hell I'd gone to work for a construction firm in any capacity, because I'm so not that dull, but I liked the buying side of things. I enjoyed that job and just I should have known better. Anyway, on the first day, for various reasons, I just thought, I'm not going to fit in here. I just thought, what the hell have I done? And just on that first day, I thought, I've got a choice. I either just try and stick it out because I'm embarrassed that I have basically pursued and got a job that I don't want and I'm not going to enjoy, or I do something about it and just get out as quick as I can. And I thought, well, do you know what? I've made this decision, but it doesn't mean I've got to stick by this decision. I've made a mistake. I need to correct my mistake. So I started looking for another job. Literally, I got home after my first day and I started looking for another job. And 11 weeks later, I started another new job, which I stuck at. And it was an awful atmosphere. It was the sort of job you would hate. You just didn't look forward to going into every day. You were filled with dread and thought of having to go into work every day. And the pleasure I got from telling them I'm leaving was wonderful, but also having the confidence to go, I'm not willing to put up with this. I'm going to do something about it. Taught me something about myself in that I'm not willing to put up with a job that isn't right for me or a place that's making me miserable. I've got to do something about that. Nobody, my mum's not going to set me. I was 25, 26 at the time. My mum wasn't going to step in and go, he's been a silly boy. Can you be nicer to him, please? It doesn't work like that when you're an adult in that. Well, it shouldn't work like that when you were a child in some ways. But, it wasn't going to work. I had to stand up for myself. I had to be a stronger person and kind of speak more honestly than I'd been comfortable doing in the past. And just go, this isn't right for me. I'm not happy. I'm getting out of here. And I did. And I can honestly say, this isn't me, I'm not bragging about it, I'm just saying it's because it's true. I did that. I took responsibility for my actions. And for the first time, I thought, I've got control over this to a degree. I can do something here about this situation. And I blooming did.
Exactly. And funnily enough, I did something very similar after one day I left a job.
Really?
No. It was awful because I was living up in Bedfordshire at the time. And so I had to commute to London. And oh, my goodness me, the commute was a murderous experience. It was just awful. It took me so long to get there. I mean, I used to commute to London from Maidstone years ago, but that was to a job I really liked.
And yeah.
Wasn't that much hassle, to be honest with you, but this commute was a nightmare. And I got there and the job was basically copying numbers from one, this by hand, you know, from one column to another. And so I said, is there anything? No, that's it, that's your job. So I thought, oh my goodness, what have I done? So I just didn't go back. I just didn't go back because and it's true what you say, it's really liberating, because you realize, well, actually I have control over this, and I'm not prepared to keep doing something that makes me unhappy.
Yes.
So it's a massive lesson. So, so we're very similar in that respect.
I think you and I generally are quite similar in many ways, which is...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, my third and final, is a petals course, which has now been superseded by something else, but I believe my petals qualification still stands, and that's preparing to teach in the lifelong learning sector. And the reason I wanted to do this was because I wanted to start running workshops on dyspraxia awareness.
Yeah.
So, but I wanted a qualification that would give me a bit of credence to actually do it rather than just, rather than just muscle in. And so I did this course and it was very interesting. It was adult education as well. And but when it got to exam time, we had to do a presentation for about 20 minutes, I think it was, so not very long really. And so I put together this 20-minute presentation on dyspraxia awareness, and I got people doing things, I had to incorporate as much, as many different learning styles as I could. And so we had some practical experiences, which was an eye-opener to some, because it was emulating how it feels to be dyspraxic. And there are several ways of doing that, which I put together in my proper courses, my proper workshops after that. But at the end of that particular practical experience, the external examiner said to me, "It's unfortunate that we can only give a pass or a fail for this." Because she said, if we could grade it, she said, "I would have given you 100% for that." So I thought, wow. I'm chuffed about that. So that was a moment, a moment I probably will never forget. But I thoroughly enjoyed doing that. I haven't done any recently because I'm retired now, theoretically, although I'm busier now, I think, than I've been for years. But I would still consider doing workshops on dyspraxia awareness because I enjoy it so much. So I could be tempted out of retirement for the...
Thank you. If the opportunity arose, would you come out of retirement for something like that?
Yeah, I'd consider it, certainly. I would say yes, I'd definitely do it because it would depend on what I'm doing at the time. I'm doing quite a lot of things at the moment. So, but I'd certainly consider it, yes, because I loved it.
Interesting. Wow.
So have we completed our part two of our best moments?
I think we have. I think what a range. What a range. I'd be interested to know what other people think as well. When this goes out, both parts go out, be interesting to know what other people's kind of, almost once in their lifetime or powerful moments are, and maybe they should share it in the Facebook group or somewhere, or wherever you listen to this podcast.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I very much like to hear other people's experiences of their best moments. But don't you think there's a theme running through this, and it's step out of your comfort zone, learn something new, don't be afraid to do it. So just give up on fear and how does it go? Feel the fear and do it anyway.
Feel the fear and do it anyway. Absolutely. Yes. That's the best time in your life when you do that. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I think we've done that. Take control. Know that you are the one who can change things in your life if you need to change them.
Yeah.
And try new things. And it's amazing. Amazing, it's powerful, and it's wonderful, and we love it.
And you own your life, and you can do what you want in your life.
Indeed.
Definitely.
So there can't be a much happier note than that to end.
Oh, absolutely.
So on that very, very happy note, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from her.
Bye.
Bye.